Welcome to Washington Exec's Givers of GovCon podcast series, where we highlight the philanthropic efforts within the government contracting community and speak to the leaders spearheading them. Over the next weeks, you'll hear us talk with givers of all kinds as we dig deeper into how and why they're giving back. So thanks for tuning in and enjoy this next episode of Givers of GovCon.
Hello, everyone, and thanks for tuning in to another episode of Givers of GovCon. I'm Amanda Ziede with Washington Exec, and our episode today is focused on Hurricane Ian recovery efforts. We know Hurricane Ian made landfall in Southwest Florida on September 28th with 150 mile per hour sustained winds. It was a strong Category 4 hurricane that caused major flooding and damage and destruction, and unfortunately even loss of life. So it's only been a few weeks since the hurricane. The nation is still dealing with the aftermath of the destruction. And joining me today is Jeremy Freeman. He is CEO of Precient Analytics, and Jeremy is involved with cleanup, repair, and recovery activities in Southwest Florida. So Jeremy, thank you so much for joining me today.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
Of course. So I'd like to start by asking if you can share a bit about your community in Southwest Florida and the connection that you have to the area.
Yeah, absolutely. So my wife and I have a home down on a barrier island called North Captiva Island. It's right off the coast of Cape Coral, Fort Myers, and was basically ground zero for the landing of the Eye of the Storm. We've been traveling down to that part since actually we were in college, so 30 plus years ago. We were connected into the Fort Myers Captiva area and just fell in love with the calm side of the Gulf, both in weather and in sea state, but also just the clientele that are down there. We're not the partiers for spring break, so we like just going and relaxing, and just fell in love with the area and then connected up with this island about 10 years ago. And have been out there along that line.
All right, wonderful. So how was North Captiva and its surrounding parts impacted by the hurricane and its residents too? How's everyone doing?
In general, I think, the community is in the recovery state. Still a little shock and a little bit of sadness. There was a ton of damage in the area. We were braced for the worst, frankly. When we saw the storm coming, directly at us kind of unexpectedly, we were worried for much greater devastation than what ended up being. We had luckily had somebody who was a private pilot who flew over the island the day after. And we were all, frankly, those of us that were remote were all pleasantly surprised that there were still structures standing and it wasn't just big piles of sticks. I'm sure people have seen, the videos from Fort Myers Beach and from Sanibel Island and from other areas down there that took a bigger brunt of the storm surge. And in those areas, some of those places are just completely wiped out. There's not a home on our island that doesn't have damage, but we also don't have piles of sticks. So that part is encouraging that we're actually going to be able to recover pretty quickly from this.
And I understand some people stayed on the island during the storm and they're all okay?
Mm-hmm. Yes, they're all okay. We had about 34 people that stayed on the island for the storm. I've yet to speak with one who will do it another time. It was terrifying. The stories that I've heard, things like roofs coming off of structures and the surreal experience of having the furniture, get sucked up into the air at head height, having their eyeglasses sucked off of their face and sucked up into the storm. Grown men break down in emotion, talking about what they experienced and how they never want to do it again, praying for a painless death. So, I mean, it was that severe. The videos that we have seen certainly don't do it justice, are terrifying to watch just in and of itself. One of the lessons to take away is if you have the opportunity to evacuate and get out of the way of Mother Nature, please do so, because there's no fighting it.
Yeah, that's unimaginable, and I'm glad to hear that everyone is okay, but I can't imagine the fear during that time.
And not even an injury. That's wow. What's phenomenal, right, is that not even an injury out of it. But that wasn't the case in the rest of the region. The death toll continues to rise. I think it's starting to stabilize now. But there was loss of life. There was massive loss of property. That is something that we have to keep in mind as we go through this.
Yeah, absolutely. So talk to us about the connectivity to the island. I know there was a bridge that connects North Captiva to its main resources, and then network and communications was down for a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. So actually, we don't have a bridge to our island. We are only accessible by small plane and by boat. So there are three barrier islands that are in a chain. Sanibel is the first that comes off of Fort Myers Beach, and there's a causeway and bridges that get you out to that island. That island has about 9,000, I think, residents between Sanibel and Captiva in that ballpark, 9,000, 10,000. That causeway and that bridge took major damage. The causeway literally has just been washed away. I mean, it's as though it was never there previously. So that was damaged. And then power was out for over 2 million people in that whole region. But power onto Sanibel Island then feeds Captiva Island, and then we are the next island up. We actually just celebrated our 100-year anniversary last year, and in 2021, our island, North Captiva, was created from a hurricane in 1921 that came through and actually cut us off from Captiva Island, and that's
wow.
When the island became its own instance. They're still working on that infrastructure. They've made huge leaps and bounds for getting power back to the local community in Cape Coral and Fort Myers in the surrounding area. I think the last metrics that I saw last night were, they're in the high 90 percentile on homes and people that have power coverage in those areas. But we still virtually have zero power out on the barrier islands. We're going to be the last kind of in line. So until they get the other islands up in operation, they can't get any power to us. So that creates a whole nother set of challenges that we have to deal with, not only the repairing roofs and getting homes dried in, but once we do that, without power, you don't have air conditioning. And it's not about the cooling nature of the air conditioning, but the drying nature of it. And so without being able to dry the air in your homes, you have the high probability of the moisture creating mold and mildew and creating almost as much damage as the storm itself.
Wow, yeah. And you just touched on some of these, but what were the most pressing or immediate recovery efforts that were needed immediately after the hurricane on North Captiva?
Yeah, so search and rescue was first and foremost. I mean, it was, who was there? We fortunately have, a community that over the past several years has really been coming together. I'm a member of the Upper Captiva Civic Association, which is kind of our community board. North Captiva Island isn't part of a city. It isn't part of a municipality. And so we are part of Lee County, but we sort of operate as our own independent entity. And so we rely on ourselves a lot for, trash collection and removal for those sorts of aspects. So over the past few years, we have really developed a much greater sense of community, and we've really focused on that. And so we took account for all the people who were going to stay on the island, where they were, what homes they were in. And then very quickly, frankly, during the eye of the storm, people were out looking and checking on
wow.
people, checking on, certain properties, those sorts of things. And then after the second eye wall came through, it really stepped up. Just as a kind of a note on that, the interesting part of the experiences that people had was that first wave of the eye wall that came through was frightening, but was largely just wind. Think about how a hurricane rotates counterclockwise. That's why we were fortunate that the eye hit us and that it didn't move northbound, right? Because the southern eastern edge of a hurricane is where the largest storm surge was. So that first eye wall came through was largely wind, some damage, but people who had stayed were a little bit encouraged. And then the eye came through, and if people recall, the hurricane sort of stopped there for a little while. And so our island was in the eye for a little bit longer than usual because the storm started slowing down quite a bit. Once that second eye wall came through, people on the island talk about everything changed. The wind was just as extreme, but then the water, the large volumes of water started to happen, and the debris from the first windstorm started to fly around and really
wow.
create other havoc. And because the storm was on, effectively on the mainland at that point, it was really starting to slow, and so they stayed in that eye wall for quite a long time, and that was the part that was most disheartening to them and probably, frankly, created the most damage. We had on the north end of our island an estimated, 4+ feet of water that covered the north end of the island. So that creates a whole nother challenge for structures and for, the airstrip. Once the storm, to give you an example, we have barge services out to the island. We have private barge services that are based out there. when the storm got through, the barges were actually up on the island. We're on dry ground.
Wow.
So, you know, the recovery efforts can't even start until you get like a lot of that infrastructure back. First thing was to do search and rescue, right? We identified pretty quickly the people who were on the island. You know, this has nothing to do with me. I've done almost nothing in this scenario, but, you know, the people on the island taking care of each other, which is the real story here. Finding each other, making sure people were safe. We had, you know, elderly people that stayed on the island that's their homes.
Wow.
You know, making sure that they're okay and getting them to safe spots, and then starting to clean up. You know, the first infrastructure piece that people on the island had to start working for was to clean the roads. They were covered. I've been to war zones. The island looked as a war zone. I mean,
wow.
The trees were down, limbs covered the roadways. You know, we only have golf carts and, you know, construction equipment that is on the island, and they couldn't pass, and so that had to start immediately. And with only a handful of people on the island, it just took a lot of time and a lot of effort and a lot of, you know, self-sacrifice for those folks to do the things they did.
Wow, yeah, and I mean, considering access to the island was impossible directly after the storm, how were you able to support restoration and recovery efforts from afar? And I think are you home based in the DMV?
I am home based in the DMV, and so, you know, we had, you know, through our civic association, we had a video call the next day to connect with the people on the island, number one, but also to connect with the community that's dispersed, you know, around the country, and to give them some insight of what's going on. You know, what are the next steps? What can we do? We are fortunate as a community to have a large number of Type A successful people that want to do. The biggest challenge, frankly, from that perspective, was to hold people off, right? Sometimes just doing activity doesn't equal progress, right? And so sometimes just doing really distracts you from the things that need to get done. And so it was giving people an opportunity to have a voice, so the leadership portions of it, the organizational skills that we bring and can bring from afar, starting to identify what are the resources that are needed, what are the supplies that are needed, how are we going to get transportation to them. One of the challenges for us as an island, because we're only accessible by boat, is we actually are accessible from Pine Island, and Pine Island has been in the news a lot as another barrier island. The roadway from the mainland to Pine Island was washed out. There's a drawbridge, and right before the drawbridge, that community, I drove through there this past weekend, and I mean, it's emotional to drive through there. I was riding down with a friend of mine who had never been to the area, and as we drove through that community that was literally just wiped off the face of the earth, he was even taken aback. And he didn't have a frame of reference, but he could tell that the piles of sticks and the rubble and, you know, the empty pilings of where, you know, businesses and homes used to exist, you know, was impactful to him. So, you know, keeping politics out of the entire conversation, the response that the state and the federal government and the local municipalities have done to come together to make these emergency repairs in such, frankly, miraculous time. When you see the destruction out there and realize that they rebuilt that road in 3 days, you know, it's not a road that we would be used to around here. It doesn't have lines and pavement and all of that. But in 3 days, they went from no road in a big hole with water filled up in it, you know, with the ocean in it, to a passable road that they could roll, you know, Publix food trucks, 18-wheelers through there to resupply the folks on Pine Island, that they could have hundreds of, and I mean hundreds of power crews ready to roll in there with their bucket trucks to start working on the infrastructure only 3 days after construction started. It was frankly miraculous.
That's amazing. It is truly amazing to see how community comes together after, unfortunately, such horrible situations. But how else has your community in North Captiva and leadership in the community come together during this time?
Largely, it's about that collaboration. I mean, mm-hmm. we have a handful of businesses, we have a handful of organizations, and we have a large number of individuals that are out on the island. And the message that frankly didn't take much of a sales pitch was we need to work together to do what is best for all of us. Right? We all have, you know, homes that are damaged. We all have business interests that are down there, or at least the ones that are business people. And everybody put that to side. Right? And people just got to work. And not only just getting to work, but in a coordinated fashion and certain people put, you know, their interests aside and said, yes, my interests are secondary to what needs to happen in sequence. Let's go get this done because it will help all of us get there faster. And so it was great to see, frankly speaking, I think we will come out of this as a community much stronger than we went in, because there is a bond and a trust that's being built in this process, that people are operating altruistically, people are operating, you know, to the common good, people are operating, you know, in a way that, yes, let's trade off and get there as fast as we can. That is incredibly encouraging. I think we'll be better off after the fact than we were when all of this started.
Absolutely. And you mentioned that you were finally able to access North Captiva earlier this week. What were efforts looking like on the ground? What was that experience like?
Just getting there was crazy, right? Mm-hmm. It really was a last minute schedule where I didn't think I was going to get to go down. But a friend of mine who has a house down in Florida on the mainland was driving down, and so I hitched a ride with him. I connected with a homeowner who actually stayed on the island, whose boat miraculously did not get destroyed in the process, who was able to meet me. And at that time, access to Pine Island was reestablished, and so I could get all the way onto Pine Island, which shortens the trip to about a 20-minute boat ride rather than over an hour and a half one way. And so it just made it more practical. One, you know, getting out there was just a challenge, the delays and the road conditions, and then just the emotional impact of, you know, the destruction. You know, there are long-standing mangrove groves on Pine Island that have been virtually, you know, destroyed. You know, all that stuff can grow back, so you know, that stuff will recover, but the, you know, the emotional toll on that. Getting to the island, initially shocked at the way the island looks different, right? It's, you know, the scars of Mother Nature coming through there is stark. And the thing I keep telling my family and friends who know the area, as much destruction as you can see in the pictures, whether it's structures or infrastructure or the flora and fauna, the pictures don't do it justice at all. Being there is just a completely different experience. So that was one. The second piece was just the progress that had been made in such a short period of time by so few people. Effectively, all of the, you know, sand roads that we have on the island had been cleared and passable. The National Guard had been through and helped to do house-to-house inspections to make sure that there wasn't somebody there that we weren't aware that was there, making sure those things were happening. You know, the fire department was back on the island and was able to support, you know, resupply and coordination with authorities to make sure that there's fresh water and fuel, because we're detached and without power, we need, you know, hundreds of gallons of fuel a week just to keep some of the basic needs of the workers that are out there. The workers, right? This is one of the biggest challenges for us, is that there's tons of work to be done out there. Well, all of our workers are local residents and their homes were damaged or destroyed, or, you know, they have a huge hardship. And so how do we, you know, facilitate, you know, raising money, making sure there's cash flow for those folks that are more, you know, unfortunate than we are to be able to sustain. And then, you know, they want to come out and support because they love the island as well and they love the community. And so, you know, as a, you know, some stories that I experienced while I was there, there's a couple that is on the island that, you know, ended up with, you know, like 4 feet of sand in their very small pool that they have. They are feeding all of the workers that are on the island doing community work and repairs every single day for lunch.
Wow.
They're cooking hamburgers or cooking hot dogs. Mm-hmm. They're not asking for donations. They're not doing that. Just, hey, our home is here. Just, if you're on the island, come have a hamburger or hot dog. And if you have one, you better have two, because we know you're hungry because you're working hard. So it's that kind of stuff that's happening. That's encouraging to me as a human.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. It seems like the community is really coming together, because that is all that everyone has. I mean, that's amazing to hear. And I know earlier we talked about this, and you even mentioned, you know, seeing war zones. And I'm sure many members of the government contracting community oftentimes have experience in stressful environments, in emergency management situations, even life or death situations. So I'm curious how that can, how this perspective can kind of be helpful during natural disaster recovery like this one.
Some of them actually want to rush into the fire, which, you know, isn't necessarily, you know, a bad thing that you want to discourage, because they want to go and help. But having the perspective, okay, you know, the most important thing in these, you know, not only stressful but, you know, challenging situations, is to make sure that you have a plan. Throwing those examples out there and saying, look, We know that it's important, but if you show up to the island, we have no way to get healthcare out here. We have no way to, other than calling a National Guard or a Coast Guard helicopter to evacuate you, right? We're a disconnected island, so this might sound a little bit disgusting, but we have septic systems out there, and we had 4 feet of water on the island. Those tanks fill up, and that stuff goes someplace. It's all out in the road, right? So you have additional health concerns about just traversing those areas that have been hazardous material that's out in the open. Helping people to say, okay, let's put a plan together. Here are the things that you can do. You're in Minnesota, great. Help us, set up a fundraising site for this activity. You're in Ohio, great. Help us to identify a place to get work gloves, to get rubber boots, to help us to get, access to generators. Help us to get on the phone and contact, the county for how we can get help. There's many things that need to get done. Coordination efforts. At the time, early on, one of the things that I was trying to do is help people communicate with one another down in the area. We had people on the ground that were on the island that were getting work done, but because the communication infrastructure was down, they weren't able to communicate with one another. And so, but they could communicate with us out in the rest of the country. And so people would call me, I would help connect, oh, well, this person has found a location for fuel and have found county access point that they can actually launch boats. These people have boats. Let's get them connected with the people that know where to launch the boats, right? Those sorts of, very fundamental things early on. It's getting the community to say, yes, let's harness your energy in a way that is helping the immediate need that will really accelerate us to be able to do the longer term things when the time comes.
And how can we help from afar? What can we do from where we are at home to help recovery efforts in Southwest Florida?
Yeah, so the first thing I would do is look for, opportunities to provide resources, right? To provide funds, right? The American Red Cross has sites set up, look for those things. Find reputable places that you can trust and that you feel comfortable in donating some of your treasure if you don't have, time and access. Frankly, people rushing down there to help isn't going to help. The governor and the counties and the municipalities and FEMA and the federal government has pre-positioned, a large number of resources. So it really isn't people that are needed. It's really funds. And it's to getting to those funds to people who really need them in the short term so that the rest of it can catch up. Our civic association is called the Upper Captiva Civic Association, UCCA. We have a number of fundraisers that are going on for our community specifically. Our fire department has a 501c3 set up to be able to fund activities through them. We have somewhat silly things like cookbooks and those sorts of things that people can, get a sense of what it's like to have, a taste of the island, that we're redirecting those funds to focus specifically on community outreach and community resources. That, there are people that are much worse off than we are on our island in the community. The challenge of living down there is some places aren't able to get insurance. There's a lot of retirees, communities that are, set up either as, mobile home communities or manufactured home communities, and those don't stand up well against Mother Nature. And so there are a lot of people that are hurting and a lot of people that are in need. So, we as a global community can really help in those ways.
Absolutely. And we'll include some of those links below, so those who would like to help and get involved can do so. Jeremy, is there anything else you'd like to include before we close our conversation?
From a human perspective, I am encouraged in a disaster like this, it could very easily bring the worst out in people, right? And you'll hear the one-off spurious example of, a looter or somebody taking advantage of a situation. But for the most part, what I'm seeing down there is the best out of humanity, right? People working together, helping each other out. I just hope we can, as a society, see this as an opportunity to learn that lesson and not create the need for a disaster like this to bring us together, mm-hmm. right? There's too many things out there that we can find common ground on. Let's do those things, right? Let's overcome all of the specific topic that disjoints us, right? And let's be united on the things that we can agree on. And I think that's what's encouraging me about this, is that bringing people together and doing the right thing does happen and will happen throughout our future.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. That's a wonderful note to end on. Jeremy, thank you so much for talking through the situation in Florida with us, helping us understand how we can help, and of course, sharing your personal experiences and recovery efforts. I appreciate you being here.
Thank you so much for having me, and I appreciate the time.